It was elementary, my dear Richard.
Nah, it was elementary, for the clues were cluey, and the answers were there all along.
I think that perhaps Richard is without a clue.
I concur.
Clueless. Yes. We should watch the film Clueless, which is obviously something that should be in a box set with this one.
Without and the film Clue.
Yeah, Clue. Without Clue, Clueless.
Yeah. They should be like a triple pack.
They should.
They really shouldn't.
They don't really. Right, let's start this off. Let's go. Hello, you're listening to Spoiler-Filled Film Conversation. Hooray! And I'm Richard Nicholas.
Over there is...
me.
Anthony Evans, that is.
And...
me, Oliver Bain.
And...
oh, he went to the both names. So I'm just Bain. I only use one. Either the first or the last. Never both. Sorry.
She can't help being strange. She's my sister.
Yeah, relatives, eh? So, yeah, we're here to talk about a film. The film we have chosen this week is...
Without a Clue.
And who picked this?
I did.
Why did you pick it, Anthony?
I don't know. I just kind of... I remember seeing it one day on, like, a Sunday afternoon on TV, and I just remembered it, and I thought, why not? I'll throw it into the fray.
It's such a Sunday afternoon film. In a good way.
It really is.
Hmm. So we're stuck with it, and we have all watched it. And so who's in Without a Clue? What's it about? Give us some idea of what it is. I mean, well, not us. We know. The listeners should know, because it's spoiler alert. We're going to spoil things. So if you haven't seen Without a Clue, check it out. Come back.
It's a good movie.
Spoilers!
That was a spoiler for the spoiler alert there.
Good. We're done.
Right.
Bane. Who's in it?
It's from 1988. It was directed by Tom E. Eberhardt. Does that mean anything to anyone else? Does it ring any bells as for anything else he's made? No?
Nope.
Okay. It stars Michael Caine as Sherlock Holmes.
Michael the Caine.
He rings a bell.
Ben Kingsley as Dr. Watson.
Ben the Kingsley.
Geoffrey Jones as Inspector Lestrade. Paul Freeman as Professor Moriarty. And we even get a little cameo from Peter Cook thrown in.
Yeah, it's a. When you said who was in it, I was just like, "What do you mean? There's Sherlock Holmes with Michael Caine and Ben Kingsley." This is a definite yes for me. So you know, I'd never heard of it. I can't say you. It's as soon as you told me the premise, I was like, "Sure, I'll watch that." And I was pleased with what we watched. It was more or less fun.
The premise is that Sherlock Holmes is actually a brainless twit, and Dr. Watson is the brains behind the outfit, but he had to use Sherlock Holmes as a front once, and now he's stuck with it.
Yeah. So now Sherlock Holmes is famous for being a great detective. Watson's the clever one who writes all the stories up and gets forgotten about by the public.
And as we start the movie, Dr. Watson has reached his breaking point and is just about fed up with having the actor Reginald Kincaid around.
Yeah. And it sort of, at first it sets up like Sherlock Holmes, played by Michael Caine, is like a good... We don't know at first, I guess. Well, we knew because we knew what the premise was. But the movie plays it like, is it the end of a mystery being solved?
Yeah, I think it's an actual Sherlock Holmes story.
Coming to a conclusion.
I can't quite remember it.
I think it's... Well, it's got the villain John Clay robbing a bank, so I think it might be the end of the Red-Headed League.
We'll go with that for now.
The Red-Headed League, that sounds evil.
So yeah, the film starts off with that, what we typically know of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Watson. So Sherlock Holmes is there, solving everything, and Watson's his sidekick. And it all plays out like we think it should.
So when I watched that bit, and I was kind of thinking, do you know, Sherlock Holmes played by Michael Caine doesn't make sense.
No.
This is not right. It didn't come across as an authentic Sherlock Holmes interpretation. And then obviously the point is, it isn't. He's a fraudulent actor, you know, paid by Ben Kingsley to be pretend to be the guy solving the crime. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets fed lines by Dr. Watson and then sort of fudges the rest, adds a bit of flair. Sell it.
Leans heavily on his acting ability rather than his wit and knowledge.
Yeah, most of the time Dr. Watson is saying things like, oh, I'm sure Holmes thought that
this big problem. Let me solve the case, but imply that it was Holmes was work that did it. Yes. Isn't that right, Holmes? Yes, that's elementary, my dear Watson.
The whole thing kind of feels like a kind of farcical stage play.
It could easily, you know what I mean? It could easily be like a sketch in like Fry and Laurie or something like that. It made me think of
the whole film has that kind of like funny pace to it, where you know this could have been like a kind of comedy Agatha Christie kind of thing going on.
So the thing that goes on is that they break up fairly early. Watson throws out Kincaid because he's sick of him, and he tries to do it on his own, but nobody accepts him as Dr. Watson, the crime doctor.
Yeah. It does have a wonderful bad ring to it, doesn't it?
If he'd called himself the crime surgeon, maybe.
The crime surgeon. That sounds like an Agatha Christie like one-off novel.
The crime surgeon. Murder.
It would be a better title for that, wouldn't it?
So he kind of has no choice but to get Kincaid back again.
It's a very important case which does get him to bring back Kincaid. It's not as if somebody's stolen their cat or something.
Yeah.
It's all to do with £5 notes and the printing plate for the £5 notes being stolen from the Bank of England.
Yeah, I'd say mystery, but that's the main crime that's been investigated.
It still has the kind of typical Sherlock Holmes mystery, but I don't want to say dumbed down, but it is a comedy. Yeah. And, you know, you're not focusing on the mystery and trying to solve it per se. You're watching the characters, how they interact, and you're waiting for the funny bits.
Yeah.
So it's light on the mystery.
It's all about the relationship between Dr. Watson and, Kincaid playing Sherlock Holmes. And it's about their dynamic and how they react to each other and what they do to try and get to the bottom of the crime, really, isn't it? Which is not what, you know, most of the time that isn't a problem, because Sherlock Holmes is being Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson is being Dr. Watson. They can get on with the case. And in this case, it's just the mystery isn't that exciting. It's just about finding the perp.
I don't know how much we really need to go into the case, per se. Because, while it is about the case, at the same time, it's all not about the case.
Well, it's spoiler alert. Moriarty stole the bank printing plates, and he's printing his own money.
Yeah, he did set up a red herring up in the Lake District.
Yeah, they popped to the Lake District for no real reason other than to do more comedy and plot.
No, that's where they thought the guy had run off to with the plates. But it was distraction or decoy. It was a ruse.
But that's the only real complicated bit in it, really, is just, he has the plates. He's under the ground, under a theatre, trying to print them and make money for himself.
And they only cracked the case because the kidnapped printer has dumped a load of faked up notes into the river and somebody finds a few.
Yeah, they contain a clue.
Yeah, that's what's kind of unique about this one, is it's not so much about what ridiculous way has Sherlock Holmes worked out from horrible, precise details. It's not about any of that, because it's about just keeping the rules... keeping the idea that Sherlock Holmes is Sherlock Holmes and not an imposter.
Oh, we did skip one bit. I knew there was something
we
missed about? There.
We skipped the whole film, we just spoiled the ending.
No. But we've missed a bit that
what?
We need to talk...
I wasn't done.
At one point...
Go on.
Watson disappears. He is assumed shot in the water and dead. And then Kincaid tries to solve the case by himself.
Yes, but that would come up surely when we talk about it now.
But fortunately, because the clue actually relates to his own theatrical background, he solves it fairly quickly.
Yeah.
At least he thinks he does.
That is all the spoiler and none of the film now. That's good. It almost means nothing. If I hadn't seen the film, that would mean nothing to me.
Well, there's so little plot that actually, what's the point of talking about it?
Yeah,
that's true. It is. It's just about. It's just the comedy between mainly the two characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good. It's a sturdy enough plot to hang all the comedy on nicely.
So the character of Kincaid, is that his name?
Yeah. Reginald Kincaid.
Reginald Kincaid.
It's a great name.
Is his tropes really are that he's an alcoholic,
womanizer
actor.
But he doesn't do that.
Who has fallen into a lucky position. Well, he attempts to womanize and fails. That's part of the comedy. So he's just sort of his motivation usually is to keep his alcoholism at bay by being able to have enough money to pay for drink. And
that's the opposite of keeping alcoholism at bay.
Oh yeah.
That's just managing it in a pen.
Managing it in a pen
also makes no sense.
What's managing it in a pen?
Like sheep.
Putting out. This is a tortured metaphor. So he's putting pints in a pen with the money he gets for being Sherlock Holmes.
With the metaphor.
leave the metaphor alone.
I'm just saying, like, Michael Caine does a good job of a lecherous drunk who occasionally pretends to be Sherlock Holmes.
I think brilliant performance from Michael Caine. I think definitely the star of the whole thing. He's just so believable. It's like, yes, I believe this character.
There are two great parallels in this movie. And I'll do one of them now. And one is that in the stories, the original stories, Watson is very dull and Sherlock Holmes does all of the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And now, when Dr. Watson is the great detective, he's still really dull and still Sherlock Holmes is doing all the interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the current interesting parallel.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of almost plays the story. It's almost the normal Sherlock Holmes story. It's only that the complication is that technically Sherlock Holmes isn't a genius is like the only thing. Because, like you say, it still plays out exactly like another Sherlock Holmes story. It's just Dr. Watson's annoyed that he doesn't get any of the fame and tries going alone and fails because people find him boring or
in that way,
don't take him seriously.
That's what makes it so plausible.
Yeah.
Is that it is... It is the same, just with a slight difference instead of being radically different.
Yeah. That's the other half of the genius casting, because Ben Kingsley is a very good actor, but he is earnest.
Yeah.
He is actually earnest, but in that way, that was a code for mildly dull.
Yeah. I've got nothing against Ben Kingsley. He's usually a villain, and surprisingly, he's not a villain in this, though it's almost as if he is a villain because he's sort of the nastier of the two good characters.
You can always count on Ben Kingsley to be a little bit cold.
Yeah, he is quite harsh. He kind of wants to. He doesn't particularly like Michael Caine's character because it got three names. It's complicated. So he doesn't like Michael Caine's character very much. He wants to dispense with him, as we say, and be
crime doctor.
The crime doctor. Yeah. So the case that he tries to break through with is the case of this these banknotes that are forging.
That are being forged by Professor Moriarty deep underneath this theatre next to the river.
Yes, but right.
Who's the guy who comes to visit him? He's the...
With Lestrade.
But head of the Bank of England? Is that what he is?
Yes.
And he's not having it. He's like, no, I want Sherlock Holmes. I want Sherlock Holmes today. I want Sherlock Holmes now. So he has to go and get him again.
Yeah, so he basically... His hand is forced to dig up Michael Caine from whatever bar or pen-based pint thing he's in.
Yeah, thanks for that.
and get him on board. And there's a bit of tension over the, you know, will he be able to convince Michael Caine's character to come and be Sherlock again, because they've sort of feuded a bit, haven't they? But really, Michael Caine's like, yes, I'm getting into a lot of trouble on my own. I do need your help and money, so I'll come along. So how do they end up going to the Lake District? Can we clear this up?
I think it's a clue related to the missing... money printer.
The actual person, the printer, is missing, and they have to investigate him first because he potentially took them.
Yeah.
And it leads them to the Lake District where he allegedly rented a property.
Right.
Isn't it a clue left in the Book of Psalms?
No, that's later on.
That's later. Oh,
okay.
That's when they plant the Book of Psalms. But it becomes relevant later on.
Yeah, the printer is supposed to be this guy who's particularly interested in the Book of Psalms in the Bible as a sort of tenuous link to solving the crime later on. But so in the Lake District, they check into a hotel. That's probably the only thing they do. They check into a hotel and then they find out that Moriarty's trying to kill them, or one of them. Because
it's kind of weird. It's like when, as an audience, we're not quite sure what's happening.
Yeah.
Until they're leaving, and then Watson explains everything on the train.
It's like they let Lestrade, who we should talk about Lestrade in a minute. They let Lestrade think that the case is closed. That the printer was meant to have taken a ferry with a ferryman to this little island where the property he's renting would be, but there was a storm and they both perished is what it looks like happened, and Sherlock Holmes and Watson let Lestrade believe that, so he thought the case was closed, but they knew otherwise.
They're secretly investigating, which is always a sly tactic of Holmes, to tell the police one thing so he gets more detective time. to trace up things.
Well, normally he tells them something just because they're too thick to understand his real reasoning and they won't believe him anyway.
Yeah.
So quite often he does tell them and they ignore him.
Mm. So in the Lake District, all that really we establish is that whose body turns up dead?
The ferryman.
The ferryman is dead because Moriarty is nasty?
Presumably, when the ferry reached the other end of its journey, Moriarty killed the ferryman, dumped him back in the water.
Oh.
Or one of his henchmen killed the ferryman, which is more characteristic of him, and then he washed up back in a very convenient place later on.
Hmm. Yeah, but the only other thing that really happens up there is for some Sherlock Holmes and Watson have to switch rooms because one of them... Oh, Sherlock Holmes isn't happy with his room.
Because he's the King Lear room?
Yeah.
And it relates to his...
Acting
days and whatnot, and it's bad luck or something. Who knows? They switch rooms, and Dr. Watson is leaning on the railings that have been sabotaged, and... No, I've got it wrong.
Where Dr. Watson should have been, Sherlock Holmes was leaning on the railings. The railings give way and he almost dies.
By comedically falling over the edge, getting caught on a spike and dangling and screaming for help in a rather funny and silly way.
His cape gets snagged on the railing. Yeah.
So Kingsley comes to the rescue and they then depart from the Lake District after finding the corpse of the ferryman.
It does have one more, sorry.
Go on.
It does have one of my favourite exchanges, though, which is where Sherlock is all upset because he knows Moriarty's involved and somebody's trying to kill him.
Yeah,
and then it basically finishes with Sherlock being reassured and Watson saying, "Don't worry, he knows you're an idiot too."
Yeah, I love the whole scene where Sherlock Holmes is freaking out about Moriarty.
Yeah, they're going back on the train and they have to stop the train and there's like a scene where they're arguing in a field and they have that conversation where it's like, "I don't want to die, Dr. Watson."
He's not trying to kill you, he's trying to kill me. He knows you're an idiot.
Exactly. It's a really good moment.
It
reassures Holmes and they get back home, where they continue investigating the crime of the stolen print things.
Mm. This film is definitely for the Sherlock Holmes lover. It's got lots of references to, like, and you can always point out one and go, "Ah, I get it." But what do you think about as a casual viewer? Say the casual viewer knows who Sherlock Holmes is and knows that he's really intelligent. Is that enough to go on for the whole film?
I think so, because he's so ingrained in culture now that you probably know just enough to know that it's not upside down, but you know what I mean, that it's the wrong way around in this.
If you've never really introduced yourself to Sherlock Holmes before, you probably shouldn't watch this first, because you might be like, "I thought Sherlock Holmes was really the thick one and Dr. Watson was the clever one," and everyone would be like, "What are you on about?" Yeah. But I think most people would get it, wouldn't they?
You know? I think in terms of like the references they have, they're done in a certain way where it's still funny, even though it's a reference. Like when he's playing, it looks like he's playing the violin. We all know Sherlock Holmes is playing the violin.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. You don't need to know that Sherlock Holmes plays the violin for that joke to be funny.
Yeah, because he stops playing and the records continues. Yeah. And they do lots of little jokes throughout. Again, it's full of these little throwaway jokes that are just funny, farcical gags. That's one of the things I like about it. It isn't just a satirical spoof. It's just a nice farce in general. Yeah. Like it's got a good humour.
You know the text a lot better than I do. Was it very well observed against the books, even though it was turned on its head a bit?
I'm not sure what you mean. What we saw is fairly accurate in terms of violin playing or the tobacco in the Persian slipper. I don't think they mentioned correspondence being attached to the wall with a jackknife, but it's pretty good. It's all very good. It's amazing how well they kept up the pace through the whole movie, and it never really flagged.
It kept that like the farcical pace all the way through.
You certainly don't need to be a big Sherlock Holmes nerd to appreciate the humour. In fact, you do. You can just enjoy it as a silly farce, even if you never look at any Sherlock Holmes again.
Mm.
So it's fun in that sense, and you don't need that much to get the jokes. No, I don't think so.
Good.
So we get back. We have like you mentioned earlier, there's kind of a breakup between, like, Holmes kind of, they're at the docks continuing to solve the crime and stuff, and that's where Moriarty is loading things in on and off ships, isn't he, or something. And there's kind of a, let's say, kerfuffle, and Sherlock Holmes is in the water. Oh, and that's quite a good bit as well, is Sherlock, Dr. Watson tells Sherlock Holmes to stay behind the cover and not get into too much trouble and just watch out for him. And of course, Michael Caine messes that up and gets spotted by Moriarty, which causes Sherlock Holmes to get caught, fall in the water. That happens mainly because, like...
Oh, it's Dr. Watson.
Oh, yeah, it's because they switch roles, isn't it?
No. It's basically, the gist of it is that Sherlock Holmes isn't in the scuffle, really, and he sees Dr. Watson apparently get shot and fall in the water, and he thinks Watson is dead.
Yeah. And if anything, he gets shot because Sherlock Holmes is on the shore shouting to Dr. Watson, and that draws the attention, which means he, you know, gets a gunshot at him. And, oh no, it seems as if Dr. Watson has been killed. Oh dear.
Then Kincaid goes, and does he get drunk? He has a little breakdown.
Yeah, well, basically, he knows he can't... I mean, he's lost his friend, seemingly, and he knows he can't solve the crime on his own, but the rest of the world doesn't think that. They're like, oh, poor Sherlock Holmes, he's lost his partner, but come on, solve the mystery anyway. Never mind you grieving about your friend. Solve the mystery, Sherlock Holmes. And, of course, he's in a foul mood and is bereft, and, as you say, turns to what he does every time, the bottle. So we get to a point where he... it's kind of just who gives the piece of advice to Sherlock Holmes to sort of get him back on the case? What causes Michael Caine's character to sort of decide, I am going to actually try and solve this?
I'm not sure now. It's kind of like a combination between Mrs. Hudson, the landlady, and maybe Wiggins, one of the Baker Street irregulars, who are the street urchins that Watson uses for information.
Oh, that's right. They haven't come up yet, but Dr. Watson has a small group of youths who know that Dr. Watson's the clever one, and he has them finding out little pieces of information.
That's a standard Sherlock Holmes thing.
Yeah.
And it's one of them, or perhaps it's Lestrade, or is it the girl...
We've got our own mystery within our podcast. We can't remember the plot of the film we're supposed to be talking about.
I think it is cumulative. Like a few different things happen and he just decides to...
There's Mrs. Hudson, first of all, who's there. And then there is the sister or daughter of the man missing.
The printer, yeah.
Played by 80s sort of semi-starlet Lisette Anthony.
That's who we have. We should talk about some of these characters then. We've got Mrs. Higgins is in on it. She knows who is the clever one.
Hudson.
Who's Higgins?
That was one of the kids. Or was that Wiggins?
That's Wiggins. Oh. No, Higgins is from Postman Pat.
Yeah.
No, he's not.
Well, right.
Anyway.
who is this landlady? And is she any good?
Mrs. Hudson.
And she knows.
She is a matronly-like lady who takes care of their apartments.
Yeah. And she's so more or less...
She's in on it. She knows.
She kind of doesn't like Sherlock Holmes very much because he's a big idiot and brings all kinds of riffraff back to the flat and is kind of a...
He's a drunken reprobate.
Yes. So she doesn't like Sherlock Holmes very much, but, you know, is willing to at least try and help him out.
She does it for Watson.
Yeah. And so the female character in it, who is the daughter of the guy who's missing.
Leslie.
She is sort of... she comes up throughout the plot, doesn't she? Because she's sort of tied into the...
Yeah, her father is the printer who gets...
kidnapped.
But spoiler alert, she's really an agent of Moriarty. Leslie is someone else.
Yeah, we get a lot of...
we'll save that for the end.
We get a lot of, more carry-on type... Well, it's not that bad. There's just... the jokes around her, really, is that Sherlock Holmes fancies her, and despite obviously not having a chance with her, is trying it on. And
she semi-leads him on, enough to...
Yeah.
To sort of... keep up the pretense.
Yeah.
And she does, I think she does kind of motivate him into solving the mystery partly as well. So,
yeah.
But anyway, he solves the mystery using his own theatrical experience because it just happens that they're underneath a theatre and he knows about this theatre and so the clue makes sense.
Yeah, he just about figures out the clue with a lot of effort on his behalf. And he gets motivated and he actually does manage to find this theatre that because there's quite a few of them that end up there, isn't it? There's Mrs. I'm not going to say the name again because I'll say it wrong.
Hudson.
Mrs. Thatcher, yes.
Mrs. Hudson goes with Sherlock Holmes to find this place. And they also take one of the street urchin kids who helps out Dr. Watson sometimes because he is helpful in some way. Yeah. He's sort of sent to be outside and wait for the police, which they've called. No, this is it. I figured out the bottom of the plot. Do the plots have a bottom? What's her name? The girl?
Leslie.
But not really. Is told to phone the police and tell them where Sherlock Holmes is going.
But she doesn't
because she's a baddie.
Yes.
And an agent of Moriarty.
The kid works it out when the police haven't arrived after a while and goes to get them himself.
Yeah. But meanwhile, Sherlock Holmes and Mrs. Hudson, I said it right this time, yay, are breaking into the theatre and trying to think, now that we've found out what to do, what do we do? Because we are just an old woman and a drunk actor. They have a little bit
of slapstick with him trying to work out what exactly he should do next.
Trying to be quiet and banging every symbol and item that's underneath the stage and just sort of getting to where Moriarty is hidden with...
I like the fact it's on a stage at this point as well. And the gags they're throwing out are really typical kind of stagey farce gags.
Mm. Yeah. There's a good bit when like one of the scenery walls falls down. And it sort of divides Sherlock Holmes and Hutchinson. Hudson. I can't remember her name. And he sort of comes through the set, through the door and things. I like the way it sort of plays off all the tropes of theatre-based pranks and whatnot.
So there's a confrontation, and then, amazingly, Sherlock Holmes has a skill which is useful, which is his stage sword fighting. And he actually gets to use his sword fighting against Moriarty.
He gets to have a little cheer about how the last play he was in, which was at that theatre, had really bad reviews, except they really liked his sword fighting and his scene with the sword fighting. It was really good.
Yes.
So he talked about that while he outclassed Moriarty a bit.
Yeah. Also, we find Dr. Watson again. How does he turn up, guys?
He just shows up.
He's there already.
He's been working out stuff on his own, and he thought it was best to pretend he was dead because Sherlock Holmes would usually do that in every other film.
Well, I'm not sure because it really hasn't been that long since he fell off the boat, presumably shot.
Maybe a day.
Long enough for Sherlock Holmes to get a bit drunk and wound up.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe a day. And maybe Watson's just been unconscious somewhere or being nursed or recovering.
But it's quite a nice bit because Dr. Watson sort of has to take cover and he's not being the active one again. So it's quite a nice moment that this reprobate Sherlock Holmes has actually proven himself to be useful, like you say. And in what way is Sherlock Holmes... So Sherlock Holmes just fights Moriarty to a point and wins. And then the police show up? What was the...
No, but then Moriarty escapes.
Possibly. Oh,
yeah. But does he?
We're not sure.
And then everything blows up.
The place blows up because there is a fire and there's an exposed gas main.
In a big gunfight we didn't even mention.
But they're
actually shooting and things going on and excitement.
They get out through the theatre. They get out through the trapdoor and out of the theatre.
Yeah.
And then they're captured by the police outside, I think.
Yeah, the police sort of come in and they surround the building and sort of come in, don't they?
Yeah, but Moriarty's still in the basement. He's just getting into the boat when it goes off.
Yeah, he's escaping through the fiery furnace of about to explode-ness.
Anyway, it looks like he's been blown up, but as with all
things,
he's going to get out of it somehow in the sequel.
He's going to be Harvey Two-Face in the next one.
He's like Ming the Merciless, you're never going to kill him. There's probably a ring somewhere and he's going...
See, two different nerd references, I like that.
I think he's dead.
No, you don't.
I think he's
alive. So... basically, yay, hooray, the crime has been solved, and Dr. Watson is grateful to Sherlock Holmes for actually
reconcile.
Yes.
Yeah, and they also, we have a nice moment where they're talking to the police about closing the case, and Sherlock Holmes, who has to pretend to be the clever one who solved everything, actually, you know, gives a mention to Dr. Watson and says, you know, if it wasn't for my good friend Dr. Watson... this wouldn't be possible, and of course it wouldn't be possible because he's the brains. But it's a nice moment at the end of the film to sort of show they've become friends at last, even though they kind of didn't like each other that much when they were working previously, it seems.
Mm. Well, now they're more like partners.
Yeah.
As before, the actor Kincaid was just a front for Watson, and he was quite arrogant in his own portrayal because he didn't give Watson any credit.
Mm.
Now he's actually giving Watson credit. Which means that it's more of a two-way partnership.
It is kind of that thing where it would be nice to have some sequels. There aren't any sequels of Without a Clue, are there?
No.
No.
It's a good idea as well.
Clueless. That's not a sequel.
No.
Or
it's about brainless girls.
Oh, but anyway, so like, I think it's the sort of thing that it would be nice to have a sequel, because it would a lot like the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes films. It has the similar sort of theme. It's kind of funny as well as action packed. Mm. It's quite clever. I mean, you know, Guy Ritchie's done the traditional Sherlock Holmes, but I think this one, you know, it's a shame they didn't have more adventures as the kind of unlikely pairing of the clever Watson and the stupid Holmes.
Well, it's, you have to come up with a whole new story then. And you have to come up with a whole new book of jokes, or just reuse all the ones you just used.
I guess maybe that's why, because it is kind of like, once you've done your one concept, you can't really redo the concept again. You're just keeping up the facade. Maybe that's why, I guess.
Of course you can. That's what's called Hollywood.
Yeah, if anything is willing to milk anything to death, it's Hollywood.
Anyway.
You guys all enjoyed, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
To be fair, it came after watching Popeye. So this could have been a terrible film, and I probably still would have liked it more.
Okay.
But no, seriously, it is. It's the perfect Sunday afternoon film.
Yeah,
it's like you can watch it. It's not going to tax you in any way.
Yeah,
it goes quickly.
It's entertaining.
Just, it's just a lovely, entertaining, funny, subversive film.
Yeah,
and I like it a lot.
Can I do my other parallel?
Go on.
Yes.
Okay, and so. In real life, Arthur Conan Doyle really didn't like writing Sherlock Holmes because Sherlock Holmes was so much bigger than him. So he tried to break up with Sherlock Holmes by writing him out as dead. And then he had to bring him back and kind of accepted him a bit more. So what you have is that, and basically this movie is that story, except you have Dr. Watson instead of
Arthur Conan Doyle.
So it's sort of a reference to like the real-life writer.
Yes.
So that's quite a clever little parallel. It's got all kinds of well thought out extra meanings, hasn't it?
Gave it more points. Just when I thought no more points were to be had.
Yeah, so it could have just been a very funny little farce, but no, it's a clever little demon of a film.
And she wanted to talk about Lestrade, although I'm not sure she still does.
Well, we didn't really mention him.
He was a kind of funny character. He was the same Lestrade of all the movies, where you're kind of bit thick, kind of doesn't quite put all the things together himself.
He's especially
angry
thick
at Sherlock Holmes all the time because he's smarter than him.
Yeah, but he was played by
Geoffrey Jones,
who is famous probably for being the guy after Ferris Bueller. Was he the principal who was trying to find out that Ferris Bueller is off? What are you looking at me like? What, like no one's ever heard of Ferris Bueller? It's like one of the most famous 80s comedies ever. You meet him, I'm telling you. Like, he's the guy from Ferris Bueller.
I also don't remember which character he is.
He's just a principal trying to thwart Ferris Bueller, isn't he?
You mean he's not most famous for his part in Howard the Duck?
You had to bring up Howard the Duck.
Don't bring up Howard the Duck.
What?
He's also in Deadwood. That's new.
What?
Hunt for October.
What monarch is he in Amadeus?
He's the king of France.
He's the king.
Yeah.
Germany?
He's the king of Austria. The emperor of Austria?
See, now we're just guessing about his film CV. Look it up on IMDb.
No, but he's in Amadeus, and that's another good
one. He's in a bunch of 80s things. For good reasons, he wasn't in films for a bit, and now he's popped up in Deadwood again. And I like him. He does a good, thicky kind of act.
Thicky.
Anything else anyone wants to say about Lestrade before we find out what other people thought of this film?
He's especially stupid.
Yeah, but he's also redundant, so he may as well get the comedy from being dumb.
He has to be stupider than Michael Caine's Sherlock Holmes.
It is at times, because we've been so positive, I want to be negative.
Okay.
Just for a moment.
Because you're just that kind of guy.
But at times, it's just really hard to think that people would accept Sherlock Holmes as being super smart when he's being so incredibly
dopey. It's almost like the rest of the rest of England have to be stupid enough to buy that this clearly not clever man is Sherlock Holmes. So I kind of...
Yeah, but that's the only negative I have.
Ab? You said you liked it. You said you wanted to talk about Lestrade. We have a bit.
Yes, we've covered that now. I just wanted to give him a little bit of a tip of the hat and to, you know, he's there. We hadn't really talked about him. But no, I'm going to grade this now. I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 because it is a very good little entertaining film. Not the best film in the world, but you'll like it.
Okay, good. Ollie, any final thoughts on the film?
It was very, very good. It was really fast. And not for a moment were you really aware that you were watching a movie and that...
I thought it was real life.
But it was real life. Name is Reginald Kincaid. it never dragged. It was a really good movie. The casting is really, really good. saying that once you get below the two top actors, nobody else really matters anyway or has much of a part to do. So, but,
it's
really, really good. I can't think of a special grading scale, so it gets an 8 out of 10. And
we could have Deer Stalkers out of 10.
Pipes.
8.
Pints in a pen.
On violin scales, it's...
I'm going to get that all day, aren't I?
Almost a Stradivarius.
Ooh. Ooh. Do you know any other violins?
No.
I would just be echoing the opinions of everyone else. I thought it was fun, great, exciting, well thought out. I think the Moriarty plot was a little bit tenuous and pointless. It was almost like it was just on the back just to be there because it has to have an investigation. But the story wasn't that, you know, the mystery wasn't all that exciting, but that's not what it was about. So I'm going to give it 8 as well because it made me chuckle and I'd happily watch it again down the road. I'm going to give it, it was Deerstalkers out of, or whatever, yes, out of 10. 8 of them.
Grading it on a sweet scale, it's probably a biscuit scale, it's probably a chocolate bourbon.
Right.
I would give it, it's a brilliant movie, I'd give it 8 out of 10 Deerstalkers for the casual viewer. But I'd give it that extra 1 point for the fan of Sherlock Holmes, just for how well all the references are done in it.
An essential for a Sherlock Holmes fan to check out as a fun bit of farcical mayhem.
There's one other thing to say, which is this is kind of half of a great Michael Caine, the sort of pair of movies at about the same time, because the other one is Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and that's more or less the same time, and it's almost as good.
Is it really?
Yes.
Was that with
blown my mind?
With Martin.
Steve Martin.
Steve Martin, right. Yeah, I have seen that before. I don't remember that well. But it was just a good period where Michael Caine was getting a lot of comedy things. Put me in mind a bit of the film Actors, where he's an out-of-work actor with Dylan Moran. That's quite a good film as well. Michael Caine can definitely do comedy, and this movie proves it, I think.
Mm. Yes. See the Swarm.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening.
See you next time.
Bye bye.
Bye.
That's short.
I need to talk less.
No.
I think the last one was long.
Yeah, the last one was too long, really.
No, you were fine. You had long periods of not talking, and then you.